the great hall, there is to be feasting, which means work for all of you." They looked sulky, but they went obediently back to the hall, and Guinevere sighed and shook her head as she walked back at Morgause's side. In heaven's name, was there ever such a lot of unruly girls? And somehow I must keep them all chaste and under my guidance. It seems they spend all their time gossiping and giggling instead of minding their spinning. I'm ashamed that my court should be so filled with empty-headed and immodest little hussies like this.
"Oh, come, my dear," said Morgause lazily. "Surely you too were 15 once. Surely you were not such a model maiden as all that. Did you never steal a look at a handsome young man and think and gossip about how it would be to kiss him, bearded or shaven?"
"I do not know what you did when you were 15," Guinevere flared at her, "but I was behind convent walls. It seems to me that would be a good place for these unmannerly maids."
Morgause laughed. "When I was 14, I had an eye for everything that wore breeches. I recall that I used to sit in Gauloise's lap, he that was married to Igraine before Uther's eyes fell on her. And Igraine knew it well, for when she married Uther, her first act was to pack me off to be married to Lot, which was about as far from Uther's court as she could send me without crossing the ocean."
"Come, Guinevere, even behind your convent walls, can you swear you never peeped out at any handsome young man who came to break your father's horses, or the crimson cloak of any young knight?"
Guinevere looked down at her sandals.
"It seems so very long ago."
And then, recollecting herself, spoke briskly.
"The hunters brought in a deer last night. I shall give orders that it be cut up and roasted for dinner, and perhaps we should have a pig killed too, if all these Saxons are to be guested here. And fresh straw must be spread in the rooms where they will sleep. There will never be enough beds for all these people."
"Send the maidens to see to that too," said Morgause.
"They must learn to manage guests in a great hall. For what other reason are they in your care, Guinevere? And it is the duty of a queen to welcome her lord when he returns from war."
"You are right." Guinevere sent her page to give the orders, and they walked toward the great gates of Camelot together. Morgause thought, "Why, it is exactly as if we had been friends all our lives." And she thought, there were so few of them who had been young together. She had much the same feeling when she sat that night in the great hall that was hung with decorations and brilliant with the fine clothes of the ladies and the knights. Almost, it was like the great days of Camelot. Yet so many of the old companions were gone in war, or on the Grail quest, and would never return. Morgause didn't remember often that she was old, and it frightened her. Half the seats of the Round Table, it seemed, were filled now with hairy Saxons with their great beards and their rough cloaks, or with young men who seemed hardly old enough to hold weapons. Even her baby, Gareth, was one of the older knights of the Round Table, and the newer ones deferred to him amazingly, calling him sir and asking his advice, or hesitating to argue with him if they differed. As for Gwydion, most of them called him Sir Mordred. He seemed quite a leader among the younger men, new knights, and the Saxons whom Arthur had chosen as his companions. Guinevere's ladies and stewards had done their task well. There was roast and boiled meat in plenty, and great meat pies with gravy, platters of early apples and grapes, hot bread and lentil porridge. At the high table, when the feasting was done, and the Saxons were drinking, and at their favourite game of asking riddles, Arthur called Ninian to sing for them. Guinevere had Lancelot at her side, his head bandaged and his arm in a sling. He had been wounded by a Northman's battle-axe. He couldn't use his arm, and Guinevere was cutting his meat for him. No one, Morgause thought, paid it the slightest attention. Gareth and Gawain were seated further down the table, and Gwydion close to them, sharing a dish with Ninian. Morgause went to greet them. Gwydion had bathed and combed his hair into curls, but one of his legs was bandaged, propped on a stool.
"Are you hurt, my son?"
"It does well enough," he said.
I'm too big now, Mother, to run and climb into your lap when I stub my toe.
It looks worse than that, she said, looking at the bandage and the crusted blood at the edges. But I will leave you alone if you wish. Is that tunic new?
It was made in a fashion she had seen many of the Saxons wearing, with sleeves so long that they came down past the wrist and half covered the knuckles of the hand. Gwydion's was of blue-dyed cloth, embroidered with crimson stitchery.
It was a gift from Chardig. He told me it was a good fashion for a Christian court, for it conceals the serpents of Avalon.
His mouth twisted.
Perhaps I should give my Lord Arthur such a tunic for a New Year's gift this winter.
I doubt if anyone would know the difference, said Gawain. No one now thinks of Avalon, and Arthur's wrists are so faded, no one sees, or would criticise if they did.
Morgause looked at Gawain's bruised face and eyes. He had, in truth, lost more than one tooth, and his hands, too, looked cut and bruised.
"And you, too, are wounded, my son."
"Not from the enemy," Gawain growled. "I got this from our Saxon friends, one of the men in Chardig's army. Damn them all, those unmannerly bastards. I think I liked it better when they were all our foes."
"You fought him, then?"
"Aye. And will do so again, should he dare to open his clacking jaw about my king,"
Gawain said angrily.
"Nor did I need Gareth to come to my rescue, as if I were not big enough to fight my own battles without my little brother coming to my aid."
"He was twice your size," said Gareth, putting down his spoon. "And he had you on the ground, and I thought he would break your back or crack your ribs. I'm not sure yet that he didn't."
"Was I to sit aside while that foul-tongued fellow beat my brother and slandered my kinsman? He will think twice, and then thrice, before he opens his evil mouth again with such words."
"Still," said Gwydion quietly,
"you cannot silence the whole Saxon army, Gareth, especially when what they say is true. There's a name, and not a pretty one, for a man, even when that man's a king, who sits back and says nothing while another man does his husband's duty in his wife's bed."
"You dare!"
Gareth half rose, turning on Gwydion and gripping the Saxon tunic at the neck. Gwydion put up his hands to loosen Gareth's hold.
"Easy, foster brother."
He looked like a child in the giant Gareth's grip.
"Will you treat me as you treated yonder Saxon because here among kinsmen I speak truth? Or am I, too, to keep to the pleasant lie of the court, when all men see the queen with her paramour and say nothing?"
Gareth slowly relaxed his grip and eased Gwydion back to his seat.
"If Arthur has nothing to complain of in the lady's conduct, who am I to speak?"
Gawain muttered, "Damn the woman.
Damn her, anyhow. Would that Arthur had put her away while there was still time. I have no great love for so Christian a court as this has become, and filled with Saxons. When I was first knight at Arthur's side, there wasn't a Saxon in all this land with more of religion than a pig in his sty."
Gwydion made a deprecating sound, and Gawain turned on him.
"I know them better than you. I was fighting Saxons while you were wetting your swaddling bands. Are we now to run Arthur's court by what these hairy grunters think of us?"
"You do not know the Saxons half so well as I do," Gwydion said. "You do not get to know a man at the business end of a battle-axe. I have lived in their courts, and drunk with them, and courted their women.
And I venture to say that I know them well, which you do not. And this much is true. They call Arthur and his court corrupt. Too pagan." "That comes well from them," Gawain snorted. "Still," said Gwydion, "it is no laughing matter that these men, unrebuked, can call Arthur corrupt."
"Unrebuked, say you?" Gareth grumbled. "I think Gawain and I did some rebuking."
"Will you fight your way through the Saxon court?"
"Better to amend the cause of slander," said Gwydion. "Cannot Arthur rule his wife better than this?"
Gawain said,
"It would take a braver man than I to speak ill of Guinevere to Arthur's face."
"Yet it must be done,"
said Gwydion. If Arthur is to be High King over all these men, he cannot be a laughing-stock. When they call him Cuckold, will they take oath to follow him in peace and in war? Somehow he must heal the corruption in this court. Send the woman to a nunnery, perhaps, or banish Lancelot. Gawain looked anxiously around.
For God's sake, lower your voice, he said. Such things shouldn't even be whispered in this place.
It is better that we should whisper them than that they should be whispered all the length and breadth of the land, Gwydion said.
In God's name, there they sit, close by him, and he smiles on them both.
Is Camelot to become a joke, and the Round Table a bawdy house?
Now shut your filthy mouth, or I will shut it for you,
Gawain snarled, gripping Gwydion's shoulder in his iron fingers.
If I were speaking lies, Gawain, you might well try to shut my mouth.
But can you stop the truth with your fists? Or do you still maintain that Guinevere and Lancelot are innocent?
You, Gareth, who have all your life been his pet and minion, I might well believe that you will think no evil of your friend.
Gareth said, gritting his teeth, It's true. I wish the woman at the bottom of the sea, or behind the walls of the safest convent in Cornwall. But while Arthur does not speak, I will hold my tongue. And they're old enough to be discreet. All men have known for years that he has been her champion lifelong.
If I only had some proof, Arthur might listen to me, Gwydion said.
Damn you! I'm certain Arthur knows what there is to know, but it is for him to allow it or to interfere, and he will hear no word against either of them.
Gawain swallowed and went on.
Lancelot is my kinsman, and my friend too. But, damn you, do you think I haven't tried?
And what said Arthur?
He said that the Queen was above my criticism, and whatever she chose to do was well done. He was courteous, but I could tell that he knew what I was saying, and was warning me not to interfere.
But if it were drawn to his attention in a way he couldn't choose to ignore,
Gwydion said quietly, considering, then raised his hand and beckoned.
Ninian, seated at Arthur's feet, her hand still touching the strings of her harp, softly asked leave of Arthur, then rose and came to him.
My lady, Gwydion said, is it not true that she, he inclined his head very slightly in Guinevere's direction, often sends her women away for the night?
Ninian said quietly, she has not done so while the Legion was away from Camelot.
So at least we know the lady is loyal, said Gwydion cynically, and doesn't distribute her favours wholesale. No one has ever accused her of common lechery, said Gareth angrily. And at their ages, they're both of them older than you, Gawain. Whatever they are about cannot be much harm to anyone, I should think.
No, I am serious, said Gwydion with equal heat. If Arthur is to remain High King...
Mean not you, said Gareth angrily, if you are to be High King after him. What would you, brother, that when Arthur is gone I should turn over all this land to the Saxons?
Their heads were close together, and they were talking in furious whispers.
Morgause knew they had forgotten not only her presence, but her very existence.
"Why, I thought you loved the Saxons well," said Gareth in angry scorn. "Would you not be content to have them rule, then?"
"No, hear me," said Gwydion in a rage. But Gareth grabbed him again and said,
"The whole of the court will hear you if you do not moderate your voice. Look, Arthur is staring at you. He watched when Ninian came over here. Maybe Arthur is not the only one who should look to his lady, or..."
"Be silent," Gwydion said, wrestling himself free of Gareth's hands.
Arthur called out to him,
"What? Do my loyal cousins of Lothian quarrel among themselves? I will have peace in my hall, kinsman. Come, Gawain, here's King Charig asking if you will have a game of riddles with him."
Gawain rose, but Gwydion said softly,
"Here's a riddle for you.
When a man will not mind his property, what's to be done by those who have an interest in it?
Gawain stalked away, pretending he didn't hear, and Ninian bent over Gwydion and said,
Leave it for now. There are too many ears and eyes. You have planted the seed. Now, speak to some of the other knights. Do you think you are the only one who saw that?
And she moved her elbow just a little. Morgause, following the slight gesture, saw that Guinevere was bending with Lancelot over a game board on their laps. Their heads were close together.
I think there are many who think it touches the honour of Arthur's Camelot, Ninian murmured. You need only find some who are less biased than your brothers of Lothian, Gwydion.
But Gwydion was looking angrily at Gareth.
Lancelot, he murmured, always Lancelot.
And Morgause, looking from Gwydion to her youngest son, thought of a small child prattling to a red and blue carved knight, which he called Lancelot. Then she thought of a younger Gwydion following Gareth about like a puppy. Gareth is his Lancelot, she thought. What will come of this? But her disquiet was swallowed up in malice.
Surely it is time, she thought, that Lancelot should have to answer for all he has wrought.
Ninian stood at the crest of Camelot, looking down at the mists that surrounded the hill. She heard a step behind her and said, without turning,
Gwydion.
Who else?
His arms came around her and held her tight, and she turned her face to kiss him. He demanded, without letting her go,
Does Arthur kiss you like that?
She freed herself from his embrace to confront him.
Are you jealous of the king?
Was it not you who told me to gain his confidence? Already Arthur has had more than enough of what is mine.
Arthur is a Christian man.
I will say no more than that, Ninian said, and you are my very dear love.
But I am Ninian of Avalon, and I account to no man on this earth for what I do with what is mine. Yes, mine, and not yours. I am not Roman, to let some man tell me what I may do with what the goddess gave me. And if you like that not, Gwydion, then I shall return to Avalon.
Gwydion smiled, the cynical smile she liked least about him.
If you could find the way, he said, you might find that not so easy any longer.
Then the cynicism slipped from his face, and he stood holding Ninian's hand lightly in his and said,
I care not what Arthur may do in the time remaining to him. Like Galahad, he may have his moments, for he will be a long time without them.
He stared down at what looked like an ocean of mist surrounding Camelot.
When the mist clears, we will see Avalon from here, perhaps, and Dragon Island.
He sighed and said,
Did you know? Some of the Saxons are moving into that country now, and there's been hunting of the deer on Dragon Island, though Arthur forbade it.
Ninian's face hardened in anger.
A stop must be put to that. The place is sacred, and the deer.
And the little folk who own the deer. But Adwin the Saxon slaughtered them, Gwydion said. He told Arthur that they shot at his men with poisoned elf arrows. So he gave his men leave to kill as many of them as he could find. And now they hunt the deer, and Arthur will go to war against Adwin if he must.
I wish Adwin had a better cause.
In honour, I must fight to protect those who look to Avalon.
And Arthur goes to war for their sakes?
Ninian was surprised.
I thought he had forsworn Avalon.
Avalon, perhaps, but not the harmless folk from the island.
Gwydion was silent. And Ninian knew he was remembering a day on Dragon Island. He slid his fingers along the tattooed serpents on his wrists, then pulled the sleeves of his Saxon tunic down over them.
I wonder, could I still pull down a king's stag with only my hands and a flint knife?
I doubt not that you could, if you were challenged, said Ninian. The question is, could Arthur? For if he cannot...
She left the question hanging in the air, and he said somberly, watching the enclosing mist,
"I do not think it will clear.
Mists hang here always so thickly now that some of the Saxon kings who send messengers cannot find their way.
Ninian, will Camelot too go into the mists?"
She began to fling him back some careless word of jest or reassurance, then stopped and said,
"I do not know. Dragon Island is defiled, the folk dying or dead. The sacred herd prey to the Saxon hunters. Northmen raid the coast. Will they one day sack Camelot as the Goths overthrew Rome?"
"If I had known in time," Gwydion said with smothered violence, striking one fist against the other. "If the Saxons had brought word to Arthur, he could have sent me, or some other, to protect that holy ground where he was made King Stag and made the sacred marriage with the land. Now the shrine of the goddess has been overthrown, since he did not die to protect it. His kingship is forfeit."
Ninian heard what he didn't say, and mine. She said,
"You knew not that it was endangered."
"And for that, too, I blame Arthur," Gwydion said, "that the Saxons could think of doing this without consulting him. Does it not say to you how little they think now of his high kingship? And why do they think so little of him? I will tell you, Ninian, they think little of any king who is cuckold, who cannot rule his women."
"You, who were reared in Avalon," she said angrily, "will you judge Arthur by the Saxon standards, which are worse than those of the Romans? Will you let a kingdom rise or fall because of some notion of how a man should keep his women in bonds? You are to be king, Gwydion, because you bear the royal blood of Avalon, and because you are the child of the goddess."
"Pah!"
Gwydion spat, and followed it with an obscenity.
"Did it never occur to you, Ninian, perhaps Avalon fell as later Rome fell, because there was corruption at the heart of the realm? By Avalon's laws, Guinevere has done no more than is right. The lady shall choose who she will for her consort, and Arthur should be overthrown by Lancelot.
Why?
Lancelot is the son of the High Priestess herself.
Why not set him to be king in Arthur's place?
But is our king to be chosen because some woman wants him in her bed?"
Again he spat.
"No, Ninian, that day is done. First the Romans, and now the Saxons know how the world's to be. The world is no longer a great womb bearing men. Now the movement of men and armies settles things. What people now would accept my rule because I was the son of this woman or that? Now it is the king's son who takes the land. And shall we turn away a good thing because the Romans did so first? We have better ships now. We will discover lands beyond the old lands that have sunk in the sea. Will a goddess, who is tied to this one patch of earth and its crops, follow us there? Look at the Northmen who are raiding our coasts. Will they be stopped with the mother's curses? The few priestesses that are left in Avalon, no Saxons or wild Northmen will ever ravish them, because Avalon is no longer a part of the world in which these wild raiders live. Those women who live in the world that is coming will need men to guard them. The world now, Ninian, is not one of goddesses, but of gods. Perhaps of one god. I need not try to bring Arthur down. Time and change alone will do that."
Ninian's back prickled as if with the sight. "And what of you, King Stag of Avalon? What of the mother who sent you forth in her name?"
"Do you think I mean to go into the mists with Avalon and Camelot? I mean to be High King after Arthur. And to do that, I must keep the glory of Arthur's court at full height. So Lancelot must go, which means that Arthur must be forced to banish him, and probably Guinevere as well. Are you with me, Ninian, or not?"
Her face was deathly white. She clenched her fists at her side, wishing that she had the power of Morgaine, the power of the goddess, to rise like a bridge from earth to sky and strike him down with the lightning force of the outraged goddess. The crescent moon on her brow burned with rage. Am I to help you by betraying a woman who has taken the right the goddess has given to all women, to choose what man she will? Gwydion laughed mockingly. Guinevere gave up that right when first she knelt at the feet of the slave's god. Nevertheless, I'll have nothing to do with betraying her.
Then you will not send me word when she sends her women away again for the night?
No, said Ninian. By the goddess, I will not. And Arthur's treachery to Avalon is nothing to yours.
She turned her back on him and would have moved away, but he caught and held her there.
You'll do what I command you.
She struggled to free herself, at last wrenching her bruised wrists from him. Command me? Not in a thousand years, she said, breathless with fury. Beware, you who have laid hands on the Lady of Avalon. Arthur shall know now what sort of viper he has taken to his breast.
In a towering rage, Gwydion grabbed her other wrist and pulled her toward him, then struck her full force across the temple, and she fell to the ground without a cry. He was so full of wrath that he let her fall without a move to catch her.
Well did the Saxons name you, said a low, savage voice from the fog. Evil counsel, Mordred, murderer.
He turned with a convulsive moment of fear and looked at the crumpled body of Ninian at his feet.
Murderer? No, I was only angry with her. I would not hurt her.
He stared around him, unable to make out anything in the thickening mist, yet knowing the voice.
Morgain? Lady? My mother?
He knelt, panic clutching at his throat, raising Ninian up, searching for a heartbeat. But she lay there without breath, without life.
Morgain, where are you? Where are you? Damn you, show yourself!
But there was only Ninian, lifeless and unmoving at his feet. He clasped her to him, imploring,
Ninian, Ninian, my love, speak to me.
She will not speak again, said the bodiless voice. But as Gwydion turned this way and that in the fog, a woman's solid figure materialized out of it.
Oh, what have you done, my son?
Was it you? Was it you?
Gwydion demanded, his voice cracking in hysteria.
Was it you called me murderer?
Morgor stepped back, half afraid.
No, no, I came but now.
What have you done? Gwydion flung himself at her, and she held him, stroking him as she had done when he was 12 years old.
Ninian angered me. She threatened me. As the gods witness it, Mother, I meant her no harm, but she threatened to go to Arthur and tell him I plotted against his precious Lancelot,
Gwydion said, almost babbling.
I struck her. I swear I meant only to frighten her, but she fell.
Morgause let Gwydion go and knelt beside Ninian.
You struck an unlucky blow, my son.
She is dead.
There is nothing you can do now. We must go and tell Arthur's marshals and stewards.
His face had gone livid.
Mother, the marshals. What will Arthur say?
Morgause felt a great melting within her heart. He was in her hands, as when he had been a little helpless child whom Lot would have killed. His life was hers, and he knew it. She folded him to her breast.
Never mind, my love. You mustn't suffer for it any more than for any other you killed in battle, she said, looking down with triumph at Ninian's lifeless body. She could have fallen in the fog. It's a long way to the bottom of the hill, she said, looking over the brow of Camelot, where it descended steeply into the mist. So, catch hold of her feet thus. Done is done, and nothing that happens to her now can make a difference. Her old hatred of Arthur surged up.
Gwydion would bring him down, and he would do it with her help. And when it was done, she would be at his side, the lady who had set him on his throne. Ninian was no longer between them. She herself alone should be his support and his help.
Silently, in the fog, the slight body of the Lady of Avalon disappeared into the mists. Later, Arthur would call for her, and when she didn't appear, send men to search. But Gwydion, staring as if hypnotized into the mists, thought for a moment that he saw the black shadow of the Avalon barge somewhere on the waters between Camelot and Dragon Island. It seemed to him for a moment that Ninian, robed in black as the Death Crone, beckoned to him from the barge. And then it was gone.
"Come, my son," said Morgause. "You spent this morning in my rooms, and the rest of the day you must spend with Arthur in his hall. Remember, you haven't seen Ninian this day. When you come to Arthur, you must ask for her. Even seem a little jealous, as if you feared to find her in his bed."
And it was balm to her heart that he clutched at her and muttered,
I will, my mother. Surely you are the best of all mothers, the best of all women.
And she held him for a moment and kissed him again, savouring her power, before she let him go. Chapter 16 Guinevere lay wide-eyed in the darkness, waiting for the step of Lancelot, yet thinking of Morgause, smiling, almost leering, as she murmured,
"Oh, I envy you, my dear. Cormac is a fine young man, and hearty enough, but he has none of the grace and beauty of your lover."
Guinevere had bent her head and said nothing. Who was she to scorn Morgause, when she was doing the same thing? But it was too dangerous. The bishop, on his last Sunday, had preached a sermon on the great commandment against adultery, saying that the chastity of wives lay at the very root of the Christian way of living, since only by married chastity did women redeem the sin of Eve. Guinevere recalled the tale of that woman taken in adultery, whom they had brought to Christ. He had said, "Let that one who has done no sin cast at her the first stone." There had been none guiltless to cast it. But here, in her court, there were many who were sinless, with Arthur himself to cast that stone. Christ had said to the woman, "Go and sin no more." And that was what she must do. It was not his body she desired. Morgause, sniggering over the lusty young man who was her lover, would never have believed how little difference that had made to either of them. Seldom, indeed, had he ever taken her in that way which was sin and dishonour. Only in those first years when they had had Arthur's acquiescence to try and see if Guinevere could bear a son to the kingdom. There had been other ways to find pleasure, which she somehow felt less of a sin, less violation of Arthur's marriage rites in her body. And even so, it wasn't that she desired so much, only that she should be with him. It was a thing, she thought, almost more of the soul than the body. Why should a God of love condemn this? He might condemn the sin they had done, for which she had done penance over and over. But how could he condemn this, which was the truest love of the heart? I have taken nothing from Arthur which he desired or needed of me. He must have a queen, a lady to keep his castle. For the rest, he wanted nothing of me save a son, and it was not I, but God, who denied him that. There was a soft step in the darkness. She whispered, "Lancelot."
"Not so."
A glimmer of a tiny lamp in the darkness confused her. For a moment she saw what seemed a beloved face, grown young, then knew who it must be. "How dare you! My women are not so far but that I can scream aloud, and there is none will believe that I summoned you here."
"Lie still," he said. "There is a knife at your throat, my lady."
and as she shrank away, clutching the bedclothing,
"Oh, don't flatter yourself, madam. I came not here for rape. Your charms are too stale for me, my lady, and too well tasted."
"That's enough," said a husky voice in the dark beyond Gwydion. "Don't mock her, man. This is a dirty business, snooping at bedchamber doors, and I wish I'd never heard of it. Quiet, all of you, and hide yourselves around the chamber."
She recognized Gawain's face as her eyes adapted to the dim light, and beyond them a familiar form.
"Gareth, what do you hear?" she asked sorrowfully. "I thought you Lancelot's dearest friend."
"And so I am," he said grimly. "I came to see no worse done to him than justice. That one," he flicked a contemptuous gesture at Gwydion, "would cut his throat and leave you to be accused of murder."
"Be still," said Gwydion,
and the light went out. Guinevere felt the pricking of the knife at her throat.
"If you speak a syllable to warn him, madam, I will cut your throat and take my chances explaining why to my Lord Arthur."
The point dug in till Guinevere, flinching with pain, wondered if it had actually drawn blood. She could hear small noises, the rustle of garments, the clink of weapons hurriedly muffled. How many men had he brought to this ambush? She lay silent, twisting her hands in despair. If only she could warn Lancelot! But she lay like a small animal in a snare, helpless. Minutes crawled by for the trapped woman, silent between her pillows and the knife. After a long time, she heard a tiny sound, a soft whistle like a bird call. Gwydion felt the tensing of her muscles and asked in a rasping whisper,
"Lancelot's signal."
He dug the knife again into the yielding skin at her throat, and she whispered, sweating in terror,
"Yes."
She felt the straw beneath her rustle as he shifted his weight and moved away.
"There are a dozen men in this room. Try to give him warning, and you will not live 3 seconds."
She heard sounds in the antechamber. Lancelot's cloak, his sword. Oh, God! Would they take him naked and weaponless? She tensed again, feeling in advance the knife driving into her body, but somehow she must warn him, must cry out. She opened her lips, but Gwydion, was it the sight? How did he know? Thrust his hand cruelly over her face, smothering the cry. She writhed under his suffocating hand, then felt Lancelot's weight on the bed.
"Gwen," he whispered, "what's the matter? Did I hear you crying, my beloved?"
She managed to writhe away from the concealing hand.
"Run!" she screamed. "It's a trick! A trap!"
"Hell's doors!"
She could feel him, like a cat, springing back. Gwydion's lamp flared. Somehow the light went from hand to hand until the room was filled with light, and Gawain, Kai, and Gareth, with a dozen shadowy forms behind them, stepped forward. Guinevere huddled under the bedcover, and Lancelot stood still, quite naked, weaponless.
"Mordred," he said in contempt, "such a trick is worthy of you."
Gawain said formally,
"In the king's name, Lancelot, I accuse you of high treason. Get me your sword." "Never mind that," said Gwydion. "Go and take it."
"Gareth, in God's name, why did you lend yourself to this?"
Gareth's eyes were glistening as if with tears in the lamplight.
"I never believed it of you, Lancelot. I would to God I had fallen in battle before ever I saw this day."
Lancelot bent his head, and Guinevere saw his eyes, panicky, move around the room. He muttered,
"Oh, God! Pellinor looked at me so when they came with the torches to take me in Elaine's bed. Must I betray everyone? Everyone?"
She wanted to reach out to him, to cry out with pity and pain, to shelter him in her arms. But he wouldn't look at her.
"Your sword," said Gawain quietly. "And dress yourself, Lancelot. I will not take you naked and disgraced into Arthur's presence. Enough men have witnessed your shame."
"Don't let him get at his sword,"
some faceless voice in the darkness protested. But Gawain gestured the speaker contemptuously into silence. Lancelot turned slowly away from them into the tiny antechamber where he had left clothing, armour, weapons. She heard him drawing on his garments. Gareth stood, his hand on his sword, as Lancelot came into the room, dressed but weaponless, his hands in full view.
"I'm glad for your sake that you will come with us quietly," said Gwydion.
"Mother!" He turned into the shadows, and Guinevere saw with consternation Queen Morgore standing there.
"See to the queen. She shall be in your charge until Arthur may deal with her."
Morgore's advanced on the bedside. Guinevere had never noticed before how large a woman Morgore's was, and how ruthless her jawline.
"Come along, my lady. Get into your gown," she said, "and I will help you peg your hair. You do not want to go naked and shameless before the king. And be glad there was a woman here. These men," she looked contemptuously at them, "meant to wait until they could catch him actually inside you."
Guinevere shrank from the brutality of the words. Slowly, with lagging fingers, she began to draw on her gown. "Must I dress before all these men?" Gwydion didn't wait for Morgause to answer. He said,
"Don't try to cozen us, shameless woman. Dare you pretend you have anything left of decency or modesty? Put on that gown, madam, or my mother shall bundle you into it like a sack."
He calls her mother. No wonder Gwydion is cruel and ruthless, with the Queen of Lothian to foster him. Yet Guinevere had seen Morgause so often as merely a lazy, jolly, greedy woman. What had brought her to this? She sat still, fastening the laces of her shoes. Lancelot said quietly,
"It is my sword you want, then."
"You know it," Gawain said. "Why, then?" Moving almost more swiftly than the eye could follow, Lancelot leapt for Gawain, and in another cat-like movement had Gawain's own sword in his hand.
"Come and take it, damn you!"
He lunged with Gawain's sword at Gwydion, who fell across the bed howling, bleeding from a great slash in his backside. Then, as Kai stepped forward, sword in hand, Lancelot caught up a cushion from the bed and pushed Kai backward with it, so that he fell into the advancing men who tripped over him. He leapt up on the bed and said, low and short, to Guinevere, "Keep perfectly still and be ready." She gasped, shrinking back, and making herself small in a corner. They were coming at him again. He ran one of them through, briefly engaged another, and over that one's body lunged and slashed at a shadowy attacker. The giant form of Gareth crumpled slowly to the floor. Lancelot was already fighting someone else, but Gwydion, bleeding, cried out, "Gareth!" and flung himself across the body of his foster-brother. In that moment of horrified lull, while Gwydion knelt sobbing over Gareth's body, Guinevere felt Lancelot catch her up on his arm, whirl, kill someone at the door. She never knew who it was. And then she was on her feet in the corridor, and Lancelot was pushing her with frantic haste ahead of him. Someone came at him out of the dark, and Lancelot killed him, and they ran on.
"Make for the stables," he gasped. "Horses, and out of here, fast."
"Wait," she caught at his arm. "If we throw ourselves on Arthur's mercy, or you escape, and I will stay and face Arthur."
Gareth might have seen justice done, but with Gwydion's hand in it, do you think either of us would ever reach the king alive? I named him well Mordred.
He hurried her into the stables, swiftly flung a saddle on his horse. "No time to find yours. Ride behind me, and hold on well. I'm going to have to ride down the guards at the gate." And Guinevere realized she was seeing a new Lancelot. Not her lover, but the hardened warrior. How many men had he killed this night? She had no time for fear as he lifted her on his horse and sprang up before her.
"Hang on to me," he said. "I'll have no time to look after you."
He turned then and gave her one hard, long kiss.
"This is my fault. I should have known that infernal bastard would be spying. Well, whatever happens now, at least it's over. No more lies.
and no more hiding. You're mine forever.
And he broke off. She could feel him trembling, but he turned savagely to grip the reins.
And now we go.
Morgause looked on in horror as Gwydion, weeping, bent over her youngest son. Words spoken in half-earnest years ago. Gwydion had refused to take the lists on the opposite side from Gareth, even in a mock battle. "It seemed to me that you lay dying," he had said, "and I knew it was my doing you lay without the spark of life. I will not tempt that fate." Lancelot had done this. Lancelot, whom Gareth had always loved more than any other man. One of the men in the room stepped forward and said, "They're getting away."
"Do you think I care about that?"
Gwydion winced, and Morgause realized that he was bleeding, that his blood was flowing and mingling with Gareth's on the floor of the chamber. She caught up the linen sheet from the bed, tore it, and wadded it against Gwydion's wound. Gawain said somberly,
"No man in all of Britain will hide them now. Lancelot is everywhere outcast. He has been taken in treason to his king, and his very life is forfeit. God, how I wish it hadn't come to this."
He came and looked at Gwydion's wound, then shrugged.
"No more than a flesh cut. See, the bleeding has slowed already. It will heal, but you will not sit in comfort for some days. Gareth."
His voice broke. The great, rough, greying man began to weep like a child.
"Gareth had worse fortune, and I will have Lancelot's life for it if I die myself at his hands."
"Oh, God, Gareth, my little one, my little brother."
And Gawain bent and cradled the big body against him. He said thickly through sobs,
"Was it worth it, Gwydion? Was it worth Gareth's life?"
"Come away, my boy," said Morgause through a tightness in her own throat. Gareth, her baby, her last child. She had lost him long ago to Arthur, but still she remembered a fair-haired little boy clutching a wooden painted knight in his hand.
"And one day you and I shall go on quest together, Sir Lancelot."
Always Lancelot.
But now Lancelot had overreached himself, and everywhere in the land every man's hand would be against him. And still she had Gwydion, her beloved, the one who would one day be king, and she at his side.
"Come, my lad, come away. You can do nothing for Gareth now. Let me bind up your wound. Then shall we go to Arthur and tell him what has befallen, so that he may send out his men to seek for the traitors."
Gwydion shook her grip from his arm.
"Get away from me, curse you,"
he said in a terrible voice.
"Gareth was the best of us, and I wouldn't have sacrificed him for a dozen kings. It was you and your spite against Arthur, always urging me on, as if I cared what bed the queen slept in. As if Guinevere were any worse than you, when from the time I was 10 years old you had this one or that one in your bed."
"Oh, my son," she whispered aghast, "how can you speak so to me?
Gareth was my son, too." "What did you care for Gareth, or for any of us, or for anything but your own pleasure and your own ambition? You would urge me to a throne, not for my sake, but for your own power."
He thrust away her clinging hands.
"Get you back to Lothian, or to hell if the devil will have you. But if ever I set eyes on you again, I swear I will forget all except that you were the murderer of the one brother I loved, the one kinsman."
And as Gawain urgently pushed his mother from the bedchamber, she could hear Gwydion weeping again.
"Oh, Gareth, Gareth, I should have died first."
Gawain said shortly,
"Cormac, take the Queen of Lothian to her chamber."
His strong arm was holding her upright,
and after they had moved down the hall, after that dreadful sobbing had died away behind her, Morgause began to draw breath freely again. How could he turn on her this way? When had she ever done anything except for his sake? She must show decent mourning for Gareth, certainly, but Gareth was Arthur's man, and surely Gwydion would have realized it sooner or later. She looked up at Cormac. I cannot walk so fast. Hold back a little.
Certainly, my lady.
She was very much aware of his arm enfolding her, holding her. She let herself lean a little on him. She had bragged to Guinevere of her young lover, but she had never yet actually taken him to her bed. She had kept him delaying, dangling. She turned her head against his shoulder.
You have been faithful to your queen, Cormac.
I am loyal to my royal house, as all my people have ever been, the young man said in their own language, and she smiled.
Here is my chamber. Help me inside, will you? I can scarce walk.
He supported her, eased her down on her bed.
Is it my lady's will that I call her women?
No,
she whispered, catching at his hands, aware that her tears were seductive.
You have been loyal to me, Cormac, and now is that loyalty to be rewarded.
Come here.
She held out her arms, half shutting her eyes, then opened them in shock as he pulled awkwardly away.
I think you're distraught, madam, he stammered. What do you think I am? What do you take me for? Why, lady, I have as much respect for you as for my own grandmother. Should I take advantage of an old woman like you when you are beside yourself with grief? Let me call your waiting woman, and she will make you a nice posset. And I will forget what you said in the madness of grief, madam.
Morgause could feel the blow in the very pit of her stomach, repeated blows on her heart.
My own grandmother, old woman, the madness of grief.
The whole of the world had suddenly gone mad. Gwydion, insane with ingratitude. This man, who had looked on her so long with desire, turning on her.
She wanted to scream, to call for her servants, have him whipped till his back ran crimson with his blood, and the walls rang with his shrieking for mercy.
But even as she opened her mouth for that, the whole weight of her life seemed to descend on her in deadly weariness.
Yes, she said dully. I do not know what I was saying. Call my women, Cormac. Tell them to bring me some wine. We will ride at daybreak for Lothian.
And when he had gone, she sat on the bed without the strength to lift her hands.
I am an old woman, and I have lost my son, Gareth, and I have lost Gwydion, and I will never now be queen in Camelot. I have lived too long.
Chapter 17. Clinging to Lancelot's back, her gown pulled up above her knees and her bare legs hanging down, Guinevere closed her eyes as they rode hard through the night. She had no idea where they were going. Lancelot was a stranger, a hard-faced warrior, a man she had never known. There was a time, she thought, when I would have been terrified, out like this, under the open sky, at night. But she felt excited, exhilarated. At the back of her mind was pain, too, mourning for the gentle Gareth, who had been like a son to Arthur, and deserved better of life than to be struck down so. She wondered if Lancelot even knew whom he had killed. And there was grief for the end of her years with Arthur and all they had shared for so long. But from what had happened this night, there could be no going back. She had to lean forward to hear Lancelot over the rushing of wind.
"We must stop somewhere soon. The horse must rest. And if we ride in daylight, my face and yours are known all through this countryside."
She nodded. She hadn't breath enough to speak. After a time they came within a little wood, and there he pulled to a stop and lifted her gently from the horse's back. He led the horse to water, then spread his cloak on the ground for her to sit.
He stared at the sword by his side.
I still have Gawain's sword. When I was a boy, I heard tales of the fighting madness, but I knew not that it was within our blood.
And sighed heavily.
There is blood on the sword.
Whom did I kill, Gwen?
She couldn't bear to see his sorrow and guilt.
There was more than one.
I know I struck Gwydion. Mordred, damn him. I know I wounded him. I could still act with my own will then. I don't suppose, his voice hardened, that I had the luck to kill him.
Silently she shook her head.
Then who?
She didn't speak. He leaned over and took her shoulders so roughly that for a moment she was afraid of the warrior as she had never been of the lover.
Gwen, tell me, in God's name, did I kill my cousin Gawain?
This she could answer without hesitation, glad it was Gawain he had named. No, I swear it, not Gawain.
It could have been anyone, he said,
staring at the sword and suddenly shuddering.
I swear it to you, Gwen. I knew not even that I had a sword in my hand. I struck Gwydion as if he had been a dog. And I remember no more until we were riding.
And he knelt before her, trembling. He whispered, I am mad again, I think, as once I was mad. She reached out, caught him against her in a passion of wild tenderness. No, no, she whispered. Oh, no, my love. I have brought all this on you, disgrace and exile.
You say that, he whispered, when I have brought them on you, taken you away from everything that meant anything to you.
Reckless, she pressed herself to him and said, Would to God that you had done it before.
Ah, it is not too late. I am young again with you beside me, and you... You have never been more beautiful, my own dear love.
He pushed her back on the cloak, suddenly laughing in abandon.
Ah, now there's none to come between us, none to interrupt us. My own... Oh, Gwen, Gwen.
As she came into his arms, she remembered the rising sun and a room in Malia Grant's castle. It was like that now. And she clung to him as if there were nothing else in the world, nothing more for either of them, not ever. They slept a little, curled together in the cloak, and wakened still in each other's arms, the sun searching for them through the green branches overhead. He smiled, touching her face.
Do you know, never before have I wakened in your arms without fear. Yet now I am happy, in spite of all.
And he laughed at her, a note of wildness coming into the laughter. There were leaves in his white hair, and leaves caught in his beard, and his tunic was rumpled. She put up her hands and felt grass and leaves in her own hair, which was coming down. She had no way to comb it, but she caught it in handfuls and parted it to braid, then bound the end of the single braid with a scrap ripped from the edge of her torn skirt. She said, her voice catching with laughter. What a pair of wild ragamuffins we are! Who would know the High Queen and the brave Lancelot?
Does it matter to you?
No, my love, not in the least. He brushed leaves and grass out of his hair and beard.
I must get up and catch the horse, he said, and perhaps there will be a farm nearby where we can find you some bread or a drink of ale. I haven't a single coin with me, nor anything worth money, save my sword. And this.
He touched a little gold pin on his tunic.
For the moment, at least, we are beggars. Though if we could reach Pelennor's castle, I still have a house there, where I lived with Elaine, and servants, and gold, too, to pay our passage overseas. Will you come with me to Les Britain, Guinevere?
Anywhere, she whispered. Her voice breaking, and at that moment she meant it absolutely. To Les Britain, or to Rome, or to the country beyond the world's end, only that she might be with him for ever. She pulled him down to her again, and forgot everything in his arms.
But when, hours later, he lifted her on the horse and they went on at a soberer pace, she fell silent, troubled. Yes, no doubt they could make their way overseas. Yet, when this night's work